And our special guest, Nick Redfern. We're going to open up these phone lines also. Let's have a special request for those of you in chat rooms tonight to call in as well, because you've been following these UFO stories for years. Those of you in the Streamlink Coast Riders section, give us a buzz. Also, you NighthawkZone.com folks, Fantastic Forum Pirates, Sorcery IRC, come aboard and we'll talk with Nick Redfern about this incredible story. Nick, we'll be back with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So, Nick, what are the implications for all of this? There's no question the surveillance has been going on, files have been kept, but what's the bigger picture here?
Well, you know, I think really there are several ways of looking at it. You know, when we look at ourselves, I guess, you know, the UFO research community, you know, a lot of theories and ideas as to what UFOs are, what they aren't. You know, is it aliens? Is it time travelers? Is it... are some of them secret aircraft, things like this? You know, there's a lot of debate and occasionally, you know, division even in the UFO subject. But I think the one thing that it's important for us to remember is that all of us, you know, all the listeners, whether they're just interested in UFOs or if they're researchers, investigators, lecturers, authors, witnesses, abductees, contactees, all of us collectively are a community, you know, and we're a community that is a force. And, you know, I think that the one thing that unites us is this issue that no matter what our beliefs or ideas or which angle we're coming from, the potential is there for all of us at some point to either have been monitored or to still be monitored to this day. And I think for that reason, you know, it's important that all of us kind of be aware of the fact that as a community, we are being watched. And, you know, that's the one thing I think unites us. I think as far as what it means at a bigger picture as well is the fact that, you know, in today's world, nobody really is safe from, you know, the prying eyes, so to speak. And but more interestingly is the fact that this has been going on for years. You know, you would imagine from some of the stories that have surfaced recently that spying on citizens has only been going on for a couple of months. You know, when you find, for example, that in the 1950s, George Adamski was the subject of a three-figure FBI file. You know, that kind of makes a mockery of the idea that this has just all begun recently. It actually hasn't. And I think, you know, the implication is that we're actually seeing state surveillance at a greater level today. But certainly, you know, it's nothing new as far as the intelligence community is concerned.
You know, Hoover's FBI, they probably had files, Nick, on everything. You know, people who sold shoes, you know, people who worked in fast food restaurants, because they didn't have a lot in those days. They had diners. This guy was obsessed with things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you only have to look at, you know, even the files that the FBI have declassified that are on their own website. You know, you can download a lot of files in PDF format. You know, they open files on rock bands and all sorts of people, you know, just because somebody wrote a political rock song or something like that. You know, and they were considered subversives. So it's no wonder that some of these people were watched. But what I find intriguing is that, like, for example, George Van Tassel. George Van Tassel wasn't as outwardly political as George Adamski, but the FBI was very interested in his UFO material, you know, to the extent that there's a lot of material on file with the FBI talking about how Van Tassel was, you know, making links between, as I mentioned earlier, biblical accounts and legends and UFO stories, you know, interpreting it as aliens coming down to Earth. So, you know, it shows that there was an interest and probably still is an interest in the UFO angle. And I think what's also significant is the fact that, you know, when you've got, for example, like in Britain, Scotland Yard and Special Branch and the Ministry of Defence spying on people, and in the States you have the NSA and the FBI and the CIA, what it shows is it's not just a small team of, you know, five or six people doing this surveillance. It's literally the entire intelligence communities of several nations actively spying on potentially anybody listening to this show who's taken an interest and perhaps a role in the UFO subject.
To the phones we go. Wild card line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, Andy in the Carolinas.
Hey, Andy. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you. I was thinking about what you said a while ago about possible necessity of conjuring up wars with extraterrestrials to justify future defense budgets.
Yep.
I think if we keep an open mind to future economies, that won't be at all necessary, because here we have diminishing Earth resources, natural resources, and increasing concerns about the ecology. And I think we're going to have to move to more labor-intensive rather than mechanized, intensive ways of doing things that we do now, and do things that are not even being thought of or done now, you know, future endeavors. So I don't think that'll be necessary. It could well be that the best defense we can have will be projecting the image and fact of an enlightened, intelligent society doing things wisely, and I think that will appeal to superior intellects.
All right, want to give us your reaction on that, Nicholas?
Yeah, I agree. You know, in principle, that would, you know, be a perfect scenario. I think it's unfortunate, and I think a lot of people would probably agree with me that I get the indication, at least, that, you know, governments, if they see the full picture of, you know, next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, with things like global warming, they just blatantly ignore it, and they just go for, you know, what's relevant to the next 10 years and for their period of time in office. You know, I think people, enlightened people who listen to the show, realize the bigger picture of, you know, hey, we need to sort of change the economy, and we need to look towards the future before, you know, society just collapses or whatever, or the environment collapses. But I think what we're seeing at an official level is just like this get-rich issue of control and, you know, let's just whip up the defense budget for this and that. And, you know, I think that's unfortunate. You know, if it's a legitimate battle, fair enough. But, you know, it's, as we mentioned, that the quickest way to boost the economy is to go to war. That's a fact. You know, whether it's for legitimate reasons or not, that's how it is. You know, it boosts the economy tremendously. And, you know, I think because that's a pattern and a trend, that it's, unfortunately, you know, it's going to continue.
Of everything you've investigated so far, Nick, is there one thing that really stands out?
You mean as far as the surveillance is concerned?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's more than anything else, it's probably the sheer scale and the number of people I was able to confirm had been watched. You know, I mean, if it was one significant case and it was half a dozen people, that in itself would be interesting. But to find literally, you know, dozens and dozens of people spanning the 40s to the present day, a 60-year period, and nearly all of the key players in the subject at some point have been watched, you know, Stan Friedman, Bill Moore, Leonard Stringfield, the contactees, various abductees, people in the British UFO research arena like the late Graham Birdsall. All these people, for example, you know, I've got them in the book talking about their files, or actually, you know, reproducing copies of the files. And when you look at that bigger picture, a 60-year period of dozens and dozens, probably three figures worth of people, or maybe, you know, even the entire community, that wouldn't even surprise me. When it's on that scale, I think that is the more or the most astounding thing of all, is that the complexity of which, you know, we've all been watched.
Let's go to our east of the Rockies line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Anthony in Cleveland, Ohio. Drive truck for a living. I guess I'm looking to see just how paranoid I really am. Years ago, I used to follow the UFO phenomenon quite closely. And one day I was in a store and I bought some bundles of UFO magazines, you know, like $3 for $5. I bought several bundles. The observation was that the older magazines were very sincere. They were well researched. They weren't necessarily, there are UFOs. The facts were just presented very intelligently. The later issues were like comic books. And to me, the paranoid part of me said that was an intentional move, that somebody bought those magazines to discredit the UFO movement. I guess I'm just looking for an observation there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, if you look at the magazines today, there are some good ones. You know, things like the MUFON Journal, the International UFO Reporter, and UFO magazine that George mentioned earlier. You know, UFO magazine, for example, I think he's a good magazine. It's a month. It's just gone monthly, and it's on the newsstands. And you know, it's something that everybody can get their hands on and get all the new up to date information quickly. I don't necessarily buy into the idea that, you know, the magazines themselves are actually, you know, directly putting out bogus stories. But I do believe that on occasion, bogus stories are being fed by the intelligence community, and magazines and books and authors, you know, have been unwittingly given bogus stories to try and either ridicule the subject or divert us away from the truth. I don't think the magazines themselves are engaged in it, but I think, you know, there are psychological warfare and disinformation specialists within the government and the military whose job it is to put fake stories out to discredit us and, you know, make the subject seem laughable. I think that's, you know, that's probably happened a lot of times.
What's your take, Nick, on Philip Corso? I know my friend Bill Burns, who co-wrote the book The Day After Roswell, is a staunch believer in the late Colonel Corso. How about you?
Well, you know, I think it's like a lot of these older cases, like Roswell. You know, as you know, I wrote a Body Snatchers in the Desert, which provided another explanation for Roswell. And then you had the Air Force coming out with Mogul. And before that, it was a weather balloon. And then they said it was a flying saucer before that.
Yeah, they keep changing it, sure.
That the problem is, I think, with these cases isn't that the people themselves aren't sincere. I think it's the fact that we don't have access to the files, and who knows to what extent, you know, somebody's read a real file or they've read a disinformation file that they believe is the real file. You know, it's kind of like, you know, mirrors within mirrors or boxes within boxes. And although, you know, I think Roswell is a fantastically important case, I mean, with most of the players dead and not having access to the files, it becomes a case of one person saying, I believe this person, somebody saying, I believe that person. But the one thing I will say about Corso is that, you know, even though, you know, he was talking about something completely different to what I was talking about, I will admit that, you know, his rank and his position makes him one of the most talked about people within the subject, and rightly so, because he did hold such a rank. And, you know, it's like, wow, somebody of that rank and level within the military and with those connections is saying, you know, that aliens crashed at Roswell. And I think that is what prompted so many people, and still does prompt so many people, to, you know, dig into the Corso story and champion it.
Sure.
There's no doubt that, you know,
he's got the credentials.
He's got, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, he's got the credentials. There's no doubt about that at all.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Nicholas. My name is Mary, and I'm from Redwood City.
That's in California, sure.
Yes, in California. And, you know, it was probably the early 80s or the mid-80s that Channel 2 actually aired a special on UFOs. And it was a one-hour special, and there was a colonel who was being interviewed, but of course he was behind a screen. You couldn't really tell who he was, but they Channel 2 went ahead and said that he checked out his credentials and everything. And he was talking about the crash in Roswell, how they had retrieved one living alien, and the alien actually loved strawberry ice cream, which I thought was very funny. At that time, he did mention, or Channel 2 mentioned that, I forget who the interviewer was, but, excuse me, I'm just getting over the flu, but they mentioned that there was a viable exchange program going on at that point, that there were some military personnel actually going on these spaceships, you know, to other planets, and then these aliens were also coming, you know, down to Earth.
Interesting. What year was this that you saw this?
It was the early 80s or mid 80s.
Okay.
Yeah, the show, I think the show you're talking about was called UFO Cover Up Live, if that's the one. And yeah, as I mentioned, the SERPO material, why it's interesting about this exchange program is that that isn't the first time that this has been mentioned about some sort of exchange program. And part of it ties in with the famous Holloman film footage. That fragments of it may have been seen, and there have been reproductions, and people have talked about seeing this film where there was some sort of pre-arranged meeting either in 1971 or 64, we're not entirely sure, at Holloman Air Force Base, when supposedly a UFO came down and some sort of exchange occurred. And this was mentioned in that particular show, and it was also mentioned, the Holloman landing at least, in a show a few years earlier directed by Robert Emmenegger. And so, you know, you have a lot of these strands about some sort of exchange program being discussed by personnel in the intelligence community with an interest in UFOs, and I think that's what some of these people were. And, you know, it seems the SERPO is the latest incarnation of that discussion. So, you know, that is one of the areas why I encourage people to look into SERPO, is because, it, you know, it's not a straightforward new story. It does have strands in the past, in the 70s and the 80s.
You know what? The movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind was based on J. Allen Hynek's book with the same title. Yeah. But I'm beginning to wonder, as you mentioned, that scene at the end where, you know, humans get aboard a spacecraft and they're gone. And, you know, your appearances are going to be gone for a while, and then they're going to be dropped off, and then a new group will go, almost like Project Serpo. I've got to get to Spielberg, Nick, and we've got to find out from him if he will admit if people in government leaked him information, because it's uncanny how so many of these events in Hollywood echo real-life events that had occurred years before that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know specifically as far as Close Encounters is concerned, but I do know, you know, you may know this, is this story about supposedly when E.T. was screened and Reagan supposedly, screened at the White House, and Reagan turned to Spielberg, they were both in the room, and said, you know, there's only a handful of people who know how true all this is. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if, to an extent, there has been participation on the part of the government or the intelligence world in the UFO subject. I mean, I do know that Linda Howe, for example, published some material years ago talking about how she'd been told by somebody in the intelligence world that supposedly the film The Day the Earth Stood Still in the 50s was somehow kind of prompted by, you know, the intelligence community to put this film out to sort of gauge the reaction of the general population. So.
Well, I've got that movie, by the way.
Yeah, it's a good
movie. Just looked at it on the plane from St. Louis to Washington, as a matter of fact.
Synchronicity. There you go.
Yeah, it is. It's all about that. And Nick, we've got a final half hour to go. We're going to take some of your questions. But again, your website, nickredfern.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And this particular book we're talking about tonight, your investigation of the intelligence community investigating people on the trail of saucer spies. So you want to tell us again how you can get it?
Yeah, if I could just say that my website's actually been extensively updated over the next week or two. So if people want to contact me, the best way is to go, or the only way right now is to go through the publisher's website, which is anomalistbooks.com. And if people click on the contact section of that website and put for the attention of Nick Redfern, they'll be forwarded on to me. And that's also the publisher's website where people can get the book, or they can get it through Amazon as well.
Hey, we've got to talk about the crop circles when we come back as well. They still continue, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Every year in England, I'm often over there just sort of digging around and seeing what's going on. Yeah, every season.
You have your own theories about what you think they might be?
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that there's some sort of higher intelligence at work. What it is, whether it's extraterrestrial, whether it's sort of connected with the Earth itself, as some people believe, you know, I just don't know. I just think there's a higher intelligence that's sort of manipulating these things.
We'll be back with your final questions. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, why are they compelling that all animals, cattle, horses, be chipped? On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about its implications. So don't miss that show. When we come right back, final phone calls with our guest Nick Redfern on Coast to Coast AM. Nick Redfern, does the surveillance continue to this day, or have they just called it quits?
No, I think it does continue, George. I mean, there are several examples I've got in the book pretty much up to the present day. One kind of quite eerily parallels that of Matthew Bevan, the computer hacker. Somebody else tried this in England last year, a guy named Gary McKinnon, mm-hmm. who was arrested again by Scotland Yard. And the US government is trying to get him extradited to the States to be tried. There are elements of the British government, his legal team that wants the case tried in England and to be tried, you know, under UK law and so on. But he was looking, again, purely just for UFO information. But, you know, the perception was that, you know, was he doing this for, you know, underhanded reasons? And then
right.
there was a...
Well, it's got to be checked. And I think our government specifically just wants to find out, how did you do it, kid?
Yeah.
You know, tell us, and, you know, we may not press charges against you if you deal with us, and maybe you can help us, you know, if they're that smart to hack into a U.S. computer system like that, they're smart enough to create some kind of a firewall, I think.
Yeah, I, as you say, you know, it's common sense that if somebody does that, they're going to be investigated. You know, I mean, I think everybody understands that. I think, however, that, you know, when, for example, you've got surveillance of abductees, that's suggested that it's being purely done not because somebody's, you know, broken into a computer system, but because there purely is interest in finding out what's going on. excuse me. But now, as far as, you know, what's going on today, I think, ironically, you know, in the internet age, a lot of the type of surveillance that went on years ago, like, you know, turning up at conferences or et cetera, that doesn't necessarily need to be done as much today because, you know, they can go online and read it, you know, on the internet in the same way all of us can, you know, news groups and e-newsletters and things like that. But equally, you know, I think significant cases and where someone's perhaps getting a little bit too close to the truth of this case or that case, I think that is what prompts surveillance. I'm quite sure, you know, for example, people like Stan Friedman and Bill Moore looking into things like Roswell, I'm quite sure part of the reason, that if not the entire reason, they were put under some sort of surveillance was connected with the fact that, you know, they were looking into a sensitive UFO incident. So I think, you know, it depends probably on the case and the person and how extensively they're looking into it. It depends on the surveillance. But, you know, then again, I could be wrong. It could just be that there's mandatory surveillance of everybody, you know, in the subject, just to ensure that all avenues are covered if something significant surfaces.
Well, I don't know. If they're spending this kind of time and money and effort to investigate people in this field, it tells me that they believe the field is real.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's one of the things to stress is that, you know, we have a 60-year history of official monitoring of people within the subject and extensive files being put together. Now, of course, bear in mind, too, that the files I'm talking about in the book are only those which we have access to. You know, who knows how many other files are being withheld that, you know, would open our eyes to other aspects of the subject or surveillance of other people that, you know, we just aren't aware that's gone on. As I mentioned, one of the problems in getting hold of files, if you can call it a problem, is that we have to wait till the person's died before we can get their file, unless they petition for it to be released themselves. So, you know, if you consider how many UFO researchers are in the subject today, there could be countless files on all those people, you know, me and you. In fact, I know there was a file put on together on me in England, but, you know, potentially anybody alive in the subject today could have a file on them. That's, you know, one of the significant issues to look at.
Let's go to the phones now. Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Yeah, it's Ron in L.A.
Hi, Ron. Welcome to the show.
Good. Yeah, you know, I heard this subject and I about went through the roof because I actually lived through this when I was a kid. We had an incident when I was a kid in Portland, Oregon in 1964. There was a UFO above our house and the neighbors saw it. It was about 2:00 in the morning. Almost the whole neighborhood saw it. The police department was out there. The fire department was out there. But my mom and I slept through the whole thing. Now, for several days later, the neighbors would tell my mom when nobody was in the house that there would be military people around our house on the roof with Geiger counters taking soil samples and photographs and all that kind of stuff. Now here's the kicker. My mom was a military intelligence communication officer in the Waxter in World War II. So she knew a wiretap when she heard one, and she swore up and down that our phone was wiretapped. And when he mentioned wiretaps, I was like, oh, man, I got to call in with this.
Really? Yeah.
Mm. And yeah, that's kind of like a classic example, you know, of me saying how, you know, there could be numerous dozens or even hundreds of similar cases like that out there. And this is, you know, a perfect and a very good example of precisely that type of thing.
Yeah. She thought the whole thing was amusing because, I mean, she used to joke that, you know, I mean, she would see these guys taking pictures of her on her way to and from work. Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, the German Abwehr was like, I mean, these guys were great compared to the FBI. I mean, they didn't even try to hide themselves.
Mm. Well, that's actually something that turns up in several cases. I mean, one classic example is Greg Bishop, who I mentioned earlier, with the mail tampering. Is that, you know, it was made clear the envelopes had been opened and resealed in such a way as to make it clear to Greg and Carla Turner, who were corresponding, that they had been tampered with. And it was almost like the whoever it was that was monitoring the mail was saying, hey, you know, we're letting you know that we're watching you. You know, maybe that's kind of like a form of intimidation, if it were, you know, if people are intimidated in that way, you know, of trying to psychologically disturb them a little bit to say, hey, you know, not only are we watching you, but we want you to know that we're watching you as well.
First time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, it's BJ in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Hello, BJ, go ahead.
I have a question. Is there any proof that aliens do exist?
You know, I mean, as far
probably,
as...
Probably the best question of the night, Nick.
Yeah. I mean, I consider proof that there's a genuine UFO mystery of unknown origins in terms of things like radar reports, credible pilot reports, government documentation, civilian members of the public witness testimony. There's no doubt, you know, that collectively, when you put all this material together, something is visiting us. You know, what it is and where it's from. Is it from point A, point B? You know, in the public at least, we don't have those answers. Whether those firm answers, you know, in hand behind closed doors, that's kind of speculative. I think my personal belief, based on people I've interviewed within the military and the intelligence world, is that they have a lot more information than we do, but I'm actually not entirely sure that they know the full story of what's going on or why these things are here and what's going on. I mean, for example, in the abduction chapter in the book I mentioned, the several of the people I interviewed, and one whose story specifically is related in the book, you know, we're told that, you know, we know something's going on. We're not entirely sure what it is. You're one of the abductees. Can you tell us? Which is, you know, kind of an ironic situation. So, yes, you know, I think there's strong evidence. You know, somebody once mentioned that if this was a murder case, you know, you could take it all the way to court and get a guilty verdict. When you look at the collective body of material, publicly we don't have an alien corpse. You know, privately behind the scenes, if somebody does, you know, then all the evidence is in hand. I think that is the problem. It's just at a public level we don't have, you know, 100% evidence. But, you know, for anybody who's seen a UFO at close quarters, that's all the evidence they need. So,
I bet the file on Zachariah Sitchin must be huge.
I would imagine the file on you might be huge as well,
yeah,
George.
Really? No, that's true. With everything we talk about on this show. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Erica. I'm calling from St. Augustine, Florida.
Hi, Erica. Go ahead.
How y'all doing? Well, I basically just wanted to make a statement, get your thoughts on that. I you know, how our immune system, you know, keeps us, you know, immune from all the, you know, bacteria and everything that's on this planet. Well, if, you know, we disintegrate if ours stops working. And I believe that's the reason why they can't come and stay here, but for short, very short periods of time, for whatever reason they're coming for information, be that may, but whatever it is. And their immune system can't handle the bacteria and the germs that we are immune to.
Well, you're right about that. Matter of fact, in every Hollywood movie where aliens try to take us over, it's always the virus that gets them.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, remember, too, that, you know, when the Apollo astronauts first came back from the moon, you know, they were put into, like, a, you know, a decontamination.
Quarantine. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Because, you know, this is actually, you know, a very serious area. I mean, Michael Crichton, who wrote the Jurassic Park novel, he also wrote a book called The Andromeda Strain, which dealt with a terrestrial spacecraft returning to Earth with alien microbes on board, which are, you know, contain a kind of like a lethal alien virus. So this is, you know, an area where, say, for example, if something like this happened, potentially it could run rampant and wildly out of control because we would have nothing on this Earth to compete or combat it.
West of the Rockies, you're on with Nick Redfern on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Douglas. I'm calling from San Francisco.
Douglas.
Yeah, thanks for being there for us. I was a Department of Defense librarian for well over a decade at the Presidio Military Base of San Francisco before it was shut down. And I never had a security clearance, but my operations managers were all so lazy and so corrupt that several times I was asked to take care of files that actually required security clearance that I shouldn't have been able to have had access to. One of these was a huge set of files concerning the Roswell incident and a lot of affiliated incidents that took place in what they called Southwest CONUS, or Continental United States, and they concerned modifying World War II technology for World War III. And basically what had happened was the Japanese, after using calibrating machines on balloon bombs over the wind currents throughout World War II in the western United States to cause huge brush fires, were ready in 1945 for what they called pokotai, or biocidal suicide missions. In 1945, Emperor Hirohito himself had a doctorate in marine biology and personally oversaw that program. And what they were using were rubberized silk aluminauts, what they called hybrid atmospheric aircraft. And they were to be flown above the radar screen, and then when they hit the coastline were to detach. These were super dirigibles above the radar screen, above the clouds. When they hit the coastline, they would detach super large flying wing gliders that would go below the radar screen into the United States and drop biocidal weapons. And the balloon bombs were taken so seriously because many of them blew electrical facilities throughout the United States at various times that more than once fed into the facilities as far away as the Manhattan Project development site. And it was so serious that they developed an organization called the Triple Nickels, which was exclusively African Americans that they considered able-bodied, that they developed into smoke jumpers to put these fires out throughout the United States. These men were supposed to receive congressional medals of honor for sacrificing their lives many times in these brush fires, but they never got anything. And what happened was after the war, what the Department of Defense called the Pentomic Paradigm anticipated eliminating runways, which provide such vulnerable targets to saturation bombing. And so this called for super dirigible uplift of reinforced wooden flying wings that were less interpretable by radar. These were developed by Gotha Industries of the Third Reich. They were to be uplifted from ferroconcrete bunkers with no need for runways in advanced Alaska positions to fly over pole on nuclear bombardment missions. So they asked the Japanese crews after the war, ordered them rather, at threat of war crimes trials, to demonstrate the wind current navigation to make this happen with the type of hybrid atmospheric aircraft that they had. But every time the Japanese went uplift, they would usually kill themselves. They would take their signal flares, fly right into the dirigible, and they would fire into it and immolate themselves. And when they tried to, the Americans were never able to figure this out until after several times that the Japanese crews did this. And the Japanese crews, when they hit ground, were so burned beyond recognition that a lot of local inhabitants who had never seen Asians before in their entire lives, it's hard to believe now in the 21st century, but in those days, many Americans had never met an Asian face-to-face. They saw these burned up.
Well, we lost right at the end, too. There's some people who believe that the Japanese might have been the Roswell, that they were like prisoners.
Yeah, I mean, that was the, if the caller's still listening, that was actually, and he wants to contact me through the anomalistbooks.com website, that was actually the scenario in my Body Snatchers in the Desert book of last year.
That's right.
You know,
That was your whole theory.
Yes, that's right. I mean, this is sort of another example of somebody relating an account along these lines. You know, there's no doubt that the Germans were working in the, you know, the immediate months and years before the end of the war on some very strange aircraft designs, you know, circular type aircraft, swept back wings, flying wing type aircraft, the Horton brothers, people like that. And, you know, people ask me, did my views on the the existence of, you know, a genuine UFO mystery completely change? And my answer is no, they certainly didn't. You know, I think that, like most people within the UFO subject, I think some UFOs are classified prototype military vehicles. But if, you know, if somebody asks me, do I think there's a genuine UFO mystery, you know, of course I do. I think, you know, there's a huge amount of reports out there suggesting that there's some presence among us which is not of this world. You know, I'm absolutely convinced of that. And the reason why I'm convinced is because my dad was in the British Royal Air Force, worked on radar, and actually tracked these things, you know, performing maneuvers far outweigh anything that we were flying. But equally, you know, I think there is a human classified military experiment angle to it as well. And it's kind of, you know, determining where one ends and the other begins, or probably more likely where there's like a spillover between the two.
Okay, next up, let's go to our first time caller line. Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Good morning.
Good morning to you, sir.
Baby Vet here. I just wanted to confirm the possibility of this military exchange. When I was in the Navy, and I'm sure you had the same experience, any country that the United States is allied with has a military exchange program in place. It's almost similar to the old nobility hostage exchange program that they had in medieval times to you know, assure that there were personnel on each side in case of a surprise. But that's all. I just wanted to comment on the fact that the military does do that with other countries, and I would assume any entity that we're allied with.
I would agree with that. Nick, as we wrap things up, only have about a minute left for you. Okay. Where does this all take us on the trail of saucer spies?
Well, you know, as I said, I think there are bigger implications for the UFO subject, you know, in terms of us all being monitored. But, you know, there's also the bigger issue of becoming a state surveillance country, or, you know, world even. We need to, you know, realize we are being watched and take a stand against it. And if I can just quickly just give a plug to one thing, if that's all right. I know you had Josh Warren on the show recently.
Yes, yes.
And myself and Josh did some filming out in California recently for a new show on Discovery Channel called X-Ops, which is kind of like a real-life version of the X-Files,
right.
going around investigating unsolved mysteries. And this airs very soon, and Josh just asked me to say that if people want updates on when the show is going to air, they can contact him at howtohuntghosts.com, and people can have a free email sent to them by linking there, and Josh will be able to update everybody as to when the show is going to air.
Excellent. Very good. Thanks, Nick.
Okay. Thanks,
appreciate
George.
You being on the program. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDessure, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.